is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker in an undisclosed location from the rural, wild, mountain west in the occupied states of America. Yeah. Going all the way back to the 1980s. This is Ozzy Osbourne. We don't usually play music on this show, do we, Lou?
No, sir, we do not.
Unless we wrote it. But, you know, I felt like taking a little trip all the way back to the 80s. So here we go for a minute. Too soon?
Yeah, a little bit too soon.
Okay. So something horrible happened, and it's pretty bizarre how I found out about it. How you doing, Lou Sandrafine?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good, Michael.
Good.
How are you doing?
Well, despite just the weirdest news I've heard in a long time, I'm doing pretty good too. So I'm sitting here yesterday working on the Fiend Phone website, and I get this email that says that a comment has been held for your approval. You know, when somebody, the first time someone posts on my blogs, I have it set up. So I have to see if it's a, you know, scammer or spam or anything. And the email came from a really fake sounding email name. It was Sex for Us was the username. And it was an IP address in Georgia. And the comment simply said, it was on my old blog, my old podcast blog, Anarchy Gumbo at kittyfeet.com. Now, Anarchy Gumbo was after the Freedom Fiend started as a podcast, but before we got on radio. It was basically like I wanted to do more than, you know, the one or two shows a week that Nima Vidati was able to do. And so I kind of started a side project. And I did, I don't know, 65 episodes, 55, something like that of this. It was mostly interviews. And it basically, I don't generally like doing interviews per se. Like when people say, you should interview so-and-so, I'm like, no, go start your own podcast. Here's instructions how, you know, but, you know, if there's people I'm genuinely interested in, I will interview them. And, but you know, interviews with me are more like a conversation. Like I talk absolutely as much, if not more than the person I'm interviewing, because they're conversations. And there was this guy named David Crowley, who was a filmmaker who was making this film called Gray State, and I'd seen the trailer of it and I thought it was stunning. You know, the content wasn't really that something I was that interested in. It was kind of like, Red Dawn. If the enemy were FEMA instead, you know, or the US federal government instead of North Korea or, the Russians. So I did this interview with this guy 2 years ago. It was, let's see, it was 2012, September 15th, 2012, this came out. And I actually did it 2 weeks before that. And he was interviewed on Alex Jones around the same time and then kind of went viral after that. I did this interview before the Alex Jones thing, but it came out after the Alex Jones thing. And he had like, you know, 100,000 views on his video back then on the trailer for this film. And now he's got like a million before the events of a couple days ago came to news. But you know, I hadn't thought about him in a while. I had talked about interviewing him again when I, you know, in this interview that I did with him, I talked about like, man, it was a great interview. We should do it again sometime. And then it just never happened. He didn't follow up or I didn't follow up or something. So, but I did this interview with David Crowley and I love talking to the guy. And all we talked about was art and filmmaking and the craft of filmmaking. We barely talked about, you know, is FEMA going to take us away in camps? And is there going to be a, you know, revolution or people fighting back? We just talked about filmmaking, man, because his filmmaking, like his technical aspect and his artistic eye were stunning. It blew me away that this guy did this on like $6,000. He made this trailer that looked like a Hollywood trailer, but better. So I did this interview. I hadn't really thought about it much in a while. And I got this email yesterday. Someone had posted, Sex for Us had posted a comment on that interview on kittyfeet.com on the Anarchy Gumbo podcast. And the comment simply said, Crowley and his entire family were found dead. The cause, quote, apparent murder-suicide, unquote. And I was like, man, I get a lot of nasty comments on my blogs. You know, I get death threats. I get people saying that I'm retarded. And I get, you know, saying that people I love are horrible. And, you know, saying my dead daughter, it's good she's dead. You know, my daughter who passed away of cancer. I've gotten some horrible ones. But I haven't gotten anything in a while like this. And I was like, man, the gall of some people, like someone would just post that, like Crowley and his, you know, this guy's a nice guy. He wouldn't kill his family and there wouldn't be a murder suicide. And I was about to delete the comment without it posting. And then I thought, okay, wait, Google is your friend. I Googled it. I ended up on the Minneapolis Star Tribune. And here is, here's the headline. Apple Valley, apparent murder suicide involved two adults, one child. And I'm reading this and it blew me away. I'm like, that guy was found dead. I'm not going to say he killed himself and killed his wife and kid, you know. That's what the paper seems to be saying. They seem to be taking, I wouldn't even say the official, you know, like the police have said, yeah, it looks like a murder-suicide, but who knows, and who knows if there's going to be an investigation, and who knows if this is a false flag. And the bodies had been there since around Christmas. Like, the neighbor noticed, like, you know, Christmas presents and packages piling up on the doorstep, and looked in the window and saw them dead, you know, with a gun next to somebody's hand, and called the police. And later I'm going to play the police radio, you know, police radio recording about 5 minutes long of, you know, them being sent over to look at the body and at the house and what they found. But mainly what we're going to do tonight is I'm going to play this interview. I'm going to play it in sections, and then Lou and I are going to talk about it. You know, I don't really want to guess, like, oh, did he do it or did he not do it? And anybody who has absolutely made up their mind, I think, is an idiot. I think it's absolutely possible. The government does kill people they don't like. The guy talked in the interview about having enemies because of making this film, and he did not say they were government people necessarily, or not all of them. You know, it could be someone, some status that he irked really bad. Could be a home invasion. The dog was still alive in the house, and, you know, not to get too gruesome, but the dog probably destroyed a lot of the evidence. So, you know, it's going to be hard to do a real investigation, and who knows if they will. I say it's a coin flip 50-50 of, I don't even want to put odds on it. You know, I think it's possible he killed himself and he killed his family. I think it's entirely possible the government murdered him and tried to discredit his whole thing by making it look like this. You can't tell. And I've known a lot of artists who were obsessed, and that's what makes a good artist. And, you know, a couple of them have killed themselves, and I never saw it coming. So you don't know. You can't know. Lou, you have comments?
Yeah, not only are we not saying that he didn't do it, but we're also saying we're also not saying that the government sent out a team of CIA ninjas to take him out, because as you've already stated, we have no evidence.
Yeah.
And you can say, well, of course the government did it because they're evil. Well, yes, that is a statement of fact that does show motivation, but it's still not evidence. And you know, it's interesting that you mentioned Red Dawn, because another movie that would come to mind based upon what I've seen from the trailer would be Uprising, the story of the Warsaw Ghetto.
Great movie.
Because
great,
that's what
underrated movie, yeah.
Yeah, because that's what this actually depicts.
Yeah, and I guess the main reason I'm playing this, and I've announced that I'm going to play this tonight, and a couple of people have been like, oh, link bait, trying to jump on the bandwagon. No, I really thought hard and long about not doing this. But the reason I'm doing this, if I want people to look at the side of this guy, whether or not he did these horrible things or whether these horrible things were done to him, I want people to look at the fact that the guy was a brilliant artist. And I want to play this interview of him back when things were good, when he was really psyched about this movie, you know, before he'd had a, I mean, he'd already had some pushback on it, but before he'd had an inordinate amount of pushback, you know, after he got the Alex Jones bump and got really big, kind of. I mean, his trailer had about 100,000 views when I interviewed him, and yesterday, like before this news broke, or like right after the news broke, before it had a chance to get bumped up by people going to look at it, it had about, you know, almost a million views. So, you know, this guy, for an independent filmmaker, was really kind of hitting it out of the park, but he was brilliant. And the thing is, like, if I would never do anything crazy, you know, I'm a peaceful guy. I love life. I love my wife. I love my cats. You know, I have guns, but I'm not a gun polisher. Like, you know, people who say when they come for my guns, and this guy wasn't either. That's the thing. He talks in here like I'm more of a gun guy than he was. We talked about that. Like he really, at the time, at least, you know, he'd been in the army and he had guns, but he wasn't really like he was talking about, like he was out walking around talking to me on the phone. He did not have a gun on him. I was like, really? And, you know, I never leave the house without a gun. But the thing is, if anything, you know, I said at the end, Nima Vedati and I say at the end of the Guns and Weed movie, if either of us are ever found dead of a drug overdose or an apparent suicide, there was probably a government agency behind it. And I want to say that again. And I also want to say that, like, if anything crazy ever happened, newsmaking to me, that happened to me, that was beyond my control, I would hope that people wouldn't throw me under the bus like this newspaper article does that talks about, you know, basically says, oh, he did it, like by saying he's credited as a writer of a movie in progress, Gray State. The trailer shows scenes of militarized police and some much gun violence and some kind of citizen insurgency, you know, like basically saying, oh, he liked violence. And, you know, today some people were saying, like friends of ours were saying, oh, he fetishized violence. And I don't see this movie as fetishizing violence. I see it as like, you know, if the government, if it turned like if they're taking you to the concentration camps, would you go like sheep or would you fight back? You know, like the movie you mentioned, Uprising.
Right. And yeah, there's been a lot of speculation as to his state of mind, his mental stability and his character. And to the people that are making these speculations, you know, I have to ask them, what is your source?
Yeah.
Is it, you know, the number of hours that you spent talking to this guy? Or is it that you read an article and you saw a trailer for a movie that scratch your crazy cat spot that made you say, oh my God, it's the bayonet policy trying to restore the Republic and the Constitution. And
he was post-constitutional by the time we did this. And he also used the phrase, people are accusing me of fetishizing violence and I'm not. And that was 2 years ago, you know, and people are still like parroting that phrase, fetishizing violence. When we get back, we're just going to start playing this interview. Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. I've been working with computer programmer Derek Slopey to create Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about Fiend Phone.
Fiend Phone is free, open-source software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try the Windows beta version of Fiend Phone right now at fiendphone.com. But we're also raising money to vastly improve Fiend Phone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to fiendphone.com and join the conversation, because if you don't, you'll set liberty back 2,500 years.
That's fiendphone.com, FENPHONE.com. Foxtrot, echo, November, phone.com.
Fiendphone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
This is the Freedom Fiends. I'm Michael Dean. I'm talking to Lou Sanderfien. Are you there, Lou? Have you been contacted by the government?
Yo, yo, yo. I am here. I have not been contacted.
You know, I actually asked...
Maybe a little bit.
I actually asked David Crowley in this interview if he's been contacted by the government, but I hadn't codified that yet into a, have you been contacted by the government? I actually just asked him a long sentence that said that. But so... we're going to get into this interview here. We'll stop and start it and maybe comment at some points or, you know, stop it for the breaks. It was not recorded for radio, so it's I'm just going to have to pause it when it's starting to go to a break. It was done for a podcast called Anarchy Gumbo a little over 2 years ago. It's an interview with David Crowley, the director of the uncompleted Gray State movie, which actually I heard he was pretty close to completing it. Completing it too. He posted some things about that recently. I will read that later. But I'm going to just go ahead and play this. Now, he was recorded over a telephone. We didn't have Fiend Phone then. I tried to get him to do it over Skype so it would sound better, but he was so busy, like, he couldn't do it. Like, he actually is out walking around the park getting exercise while he's doing this. So, you know, and it starts with him talking about how much he loves life and what a great day he's having, and it kind of ends with him talking about how he has enemies for making the movie. So here it goes. The interview with David Crowley, talking almost entirely about the art of filmmaking and being an independent artist from 2.5 years ago.
Welcome to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Michael W. Dean of the Freedom Fiends cooks up a very special blend of liberty, guns, sex, rock and roll, drugs, and thriving in spite of the state in an increasingly worrying world. All with a rotating cast of nifty guests who are also up in the middle of the night.
Hi, welcome to another episode of the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Today, our guest is David Crowley, director of the upcoming amazing movie, Gray State. How are you doing today, David?
Oh, I'm doing great, Michael. Thanks for having me on.
Cool. Are you out in a park somewhere? Loving
Yeah, I'm taking a walk. It's gorgeous. I'm trying to enjoy the weather while I still can.
You're in Texas, right?
I'm actually in Minnesota.
Ah, I thought you were in your phone number is Texas, isn't it? I don't know.
Anyway. It sure is. Yeah, I was stationed down there in Fort Hood for a year or two.
Oh, you're military?
Yes, I'm a veteran.
Ah, you know, my son's in the Army. I was wondering why, how you got such properly, what's the word? Like, the people holding guns in your film do not look like mall ninjas. They look like citizens who've had some kind of severely good training. Are a lot of the military?
Severely good training. I'm going to have to use that one. Actually, well, we have a good mix. Mitch, my partner, and I, we're both veterans. We run the Bullet Exchange, which is a military prop rental company, and we also do actor training. So anyone who ended up in our film who had to wield a weapon got a crash course, at least, in weapons training. Denny Mason, our lead actor, he actually had like 2 years of weapons training through us. But anything that we do, we try to do accurately. So I'm glad that you picked up on that.
Good. You know, one thing I hate a lot about Hollywood movies that is correct in your movie is in the trailer that I've seen, at least the extended trailer, is the guns act like guns. You know, in Hollywood movies, whenever someone like moves a gun or points a gun, you know, they'll be pointing an AR-15, and when they move it, you'll hear like a cocking sound, and it's the, and it's a cocking sound from a revolver. It's like, what the hell is that, you know? And a lot of
I do plenty of that, dicing up sound effects, but only when I need to. You know, pointing a rifle obviously doesn't make it sound off.
So, I know.
Yeah, we avoid that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And are you just the director, or are you what else did you do on this? What hats did you wear on this project?
I wear many hats. I'm the writer, director, producer, editor, graphic artist, marketing guy, composer. Anything that can be done, I did for this project. And of course, I'm aided by a core group of guys. Mitch Hiles is my co-producer and director of photography, and Danny Mason, who helped me develop a lot of the story concepts, and he's also the lead actor.
Excellent. Yeah, it seems like you have a really amazing crew assembled for this. The actors are really good too. You asked me if I wanted to interview the actors with you, and I'm like, no, I want to interview the director, man, because, you know, I'm a director, and I hate to say it, but no matter how good actors are, I kind of look at them like talking props. But that's, I don't tell them that.
I won't tell them either.
Okay. I mean, it's a lot more than that. Put it this way. A great film is often made by the actor in a certain way, but often any other actor would have been just as good who's a good actor. Really, I subscribe to the French idea that, like, the director is the auteur. The director is all, and who the person who makes it. But that could be ego, so.
Well, no, I think there's a lot to that, because actors, I used to have the same kind of ideas, like, actors are just utilitarian. They're going to do exactly what the director tells them. But
all right, we're going to go to a break and come back with more of a 2-year-old interview with David Crowley, director of Gray State movie. Give me a worms, Lou.
Wames.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
We'll be right back.
right, so we're going to talk more in this show, but I'm going to go back to playing this interview from 2 years ago with David Crowley, director of Gray State, who was found dead on Saturday with his wife and his kid dead. Had been in their house for a couple, 2 or 3 weeks. Dog was alive. And the paper is kind of implying that the police are implying that maybe it was a murder-suicide. The internets are saying it was, most of the internets are saying it was a false flag, that he was murdered for poking the government beast too much. I don't really know. And whoever you are listening, you don't really know either. Unless you killed him, then you'd know. But nobody really knows, except if anybody else was in the house. So, you know, you can have your theories all you want. All I'm trying to do today is put a human face on a guy who was a brilliant artist and who really loved art and was really committed to art and very good at it. Talking about art. This is the only interview I've heard where all he talked about was art. He wasn't talking about the government or the black helicopters or any of that. He was just talking about art. And, you know, I think he deserves that. And I would hope that people would listen to this and consider it before they just say, yeah, he did it. You know, before you just parrot what the newspapers say or say he was fetishizing violence, which he mentions. But I'm going to let him talk. I'm going to stop talking. So here we go, man.
I shot with a couple feature films over the past couple of years, and I've seen some incredible acting that like made the entire set go to a standstill. And there are those moments in which the actor really makes it happen. But on a technical basis, I would say the director is responsible for every artistic vision that the film creates.
Including,
so the director has to have his,
including the actors. Yeah. You know, and a lot of times, sometimes it's based on availability, but you know, if you just look at some of the great movies and see like who was originally considered for the part, you're like, yeah, he would have worked in that too. And you know, there is something true about that thing of like great actors, you know, of they just reach through the lens and grab the person. There's something magical about it. You know, I was telling you before this, I did a movie that was narrated by Robert Downey Jr. He's not on camera in it, but it took an hour for him to narrate the movie. I mean, it was, and I was in the studio sort of directing, but he didn't really need much direction. He's Robert Downey Jr. But it was like, it was the most professional person I've ever been in a room with. And that guy has it. You know, there's a lot of actors that are serviceable, but they don't have it. And he's one of those ones that has it. And there's a lot of people who are not famous who have it too. And hopefully they'll get more exposure from projects like yours.
Oh, absolutely. Charles Hubble, the lead actor of my film. Yeah.
He's good, man. He's got it.
Guy.
He's got it. I could tell.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. He's the one who I reference when he brings the set to a standstill. He did it on my film. I was honored to give him that opportunity, actually, because being in the same room with this guy is intimidating because he's just really, really good.
Yep. You know, I have one critique for you, and you can take it or leave it. In all of the interviews that you've done a lot of like talking about how it's you're in Minneapolis, right?
Yep.
Yeah. There's a lot of talk about how it's a Minneapolis production and it's a great production of Minneapolis people. And it's like, while I understand the thing of wanting to like trumpet your hometown and you've got a great scene there that nobody recognizes yet, I think it limits it because I don't think it's a Minneapolis film. I think it's going to be an international film, and I think you shouldn't talk about it like it's a local band playing at the garage, you know?
No, that's great criticism. But the thing is, when I was crafting like the marketing package, I wasn't sure which pond would bite. You know, so yeah. I've got a lot of contacts locally who would fund the film if they knew it was going to be a local production. So I want to kind of pitch it both ways. But whoever bites first will get the apple.
Well, you know, man,
we are mobile.
You just have two press packages then.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. This is my first one, my first major feature film push, so I'm definitely learning.
Yeah, I mean, Prince was from Minneapolis, but who knows that? They just know Prince, you know?
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, he's
I'm definitely not tethered to Minneapolis by any means, but if I get more funding that way, you know, I'll play that game.
Yeah. So you're what have you spent so far making this trailer?
That's impossible to decide, Billy. We spent $6,000 in cash, my partner and I. That's just out of pocket through our production company. And that's just, you know, money spent harnessing the actors to our set and getting the props that we needed. But we spent another year in post doing 17-hour days. So, I mean, how do you put a price tag on that?
Right. Well, I don't. I mean, I do if it ever sells and makes, you know, a lot of money, then you bill hourly for that. But It's a labor of love and out of pocket right now. Are you using credit cards at all? You going into debt on this?
Nope. It's all paid for.
Excellent. So excellent. And that seems like a really smart... I would be really surprised if you said yes, based on a lot of the plot of the movie seems to be about, like, you know...
we pay cash. We pay cash for everything.
I would expect you pay gold and ammo, not even cash, but, you know, not everybody takes gold and ammo. Are you a gun guy?
Absolutely. Oh, yes.
Do you have a gun on you right now?
Not right now. I'm going casual today.
Really? I call that going naked, man. That's not casual.
You know, you're absolutely right. I just didn't think to grab it on my way out.
Yeah, it's...
I usually carry.
Good. You know, Ted Nugent, I don't like him because he's really, really statist, but he said a couple things that are really funny. One is, the right to bear arms means I've got some on me right now. And he didn't even say got one on me. He said got some on me right now. And that's kind of how I feel about it, but...
That's awesome.
So
for people, I know guys like that.
I'm going to embed the trailer for this movie. I really want people listening to go to Anarchy Gumbo Podcast at Kitty Feet, K-I-T-T-Y, F as in Frank, E-E-T.com, and look at the trailer for this. It's stunning. I've described it to people when they ask me what it's about. I say, well, it's kind of like Red Dawn if instead of the enemy being the Soviets, it was FEMA, you know? And a lot of people have been waiting for the remake of Red Dawn, which allegedly is done, but then they have postponed it because they had to change the soldiers from Chinese to North Korean because some of the funding was Chinese or something like that. So that may
well, too close to reality that way.
Yeah.
You gotta have it like Jordan Tade, the musician in the Liberty Movement, he described this to me. Like, people are comfortable with the post-apocalyptic doomsday scenario as long as it's so many steps removed from reality. For example, Mad Max or something.
Yeah.
Because then it's fantasy. Then I don't have to pay attention. But Gray State doesn't pull their punches like that. It's right here, right now. And it's not even Red Dawn meets FEMA. It's
1984.
It's, I don't know.
It's 1984.
It's more like a zombie movie. Like, everyone's already here. It's not like the planes are flying over and FEMA's jumping out of them.
Right. Except
they're already here.
Right. And I noticed that, too. It was like, it wasn't, you know, things being brought in. It was things that are already in your neighborhood. You know, like fusion centers and militarized police. And, you know, I mean, you talk about zombies. Zombies are really big right now. There's a lot of zombie movies, and a lot of people who are into prepping and into gun training like to talk about zombie hunting exercises, and there's zombie targets. And I really don't like that, actually. I think it's almost a political correctness of, like, no, the people that you're training to shoot are going to be people, humans, trying to kill you. They're not going to be zombies. They're going to be humans, you know?
Yeah, I would agree. I think once you can remove humanity by degree, you know, zombies, you don't think of them as your neighbors. They're just slobbering fiends who want to feast on you, and it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun blowing their heads off. And once you can kind of instill that training, then you can dehumanize your target. It's not going to be that way.
No, it's going to be, you know, I don't know if it'll be my neighbors, because my neighbors are mostly Mormon preppers, so they're probably not going to come over and try to take my food stores. But when I lived in California, you know, a lot of my neighbors, I mean, if the power went out for 3 days, people started looting, you know, let alone anything described in your movie.
Oh, 72 hours to steal for something, a week to kill for it, and that's the timeline we're on. The places like Las Vegas, they are 4 days away from extinction at any given moment.
Why Las Vegas in particular?
It's isolated in the desert. How much of a food supply and water supply does it have? Where is its water coming from?
Yeah.
The second the pipes stop flowing, the electricity goes off, those people are doomed.
Whereas here in Wyoming, I think people could survive for a good number of months hunting. I mean, there's, you know, hell, I could hunt bunnies in my yard without waste ammo. I could just go out with a blanket and throw it over a bunch of pigeons, you know? And there's antelope all over town.
Everyone else knows that, too, and you'll be fighting them off the property.
That's true. I mean, deer hunting season here is like a holiday. I mean, literally, like, people who own businesses don't expect anyone to come into work on the first day of deer hunting season here.
Oh, Minnesota's huge on hunting, too. I don't necessarily do it myself, but, you know, I respect someone's right to hunt. I'm not one of those guys who think, like, having the name Hunter is bad.
Yeah, that was a recent one. That was horrible and ironic.
Got that.
So what made you want to make this movie?
Oh, my. Well, I'm a filmmaker. I'm always looking for the next new project. Speaking of zombies, I've done a few zombie shorts, but, you know, those are student projects, not something I'm going to throw around in front of me.
Where'd you go to school? Did you go to film school?
After the military, I did go to Minnesota School of Business. They have a digital video program, which I'm not entirely pleased to admit that I attend. It's not that strenuous, but it's an opportunity for me to do what I want to do, which is make films, real films.
Yeah.
And I guess Danny Mason kind of introduced me to a lot of these ideas like FEMA and martial law and stuff. And I'm like, at first I'm like, oh, cool, this is a good premise for a film. And, you know, the more you get into it, it's like, oh, this is real. I gotta care about this. And then you have that period of several months where you don't want to go outside. I went through that. But it's been my prerogative as a filmmaker to craft a narrative out of this, you know, filter through all the mess, kind of develop a scenario, and then decide how to tell a story through it. And that's kind of what I've been all about for the last 2 years or so.
Will Gray State have a happy ending?
What do you think? You tell me. That's the question I want to hear.
Do you know? Do you know the answer to that yet?
Oh, yeah, I do. Okay. I want to hear what you have to say.
I mean, I would guess and hope that it probably has a triumphant ending, but it's the hero standing on a pile of bodies, some of them people he knew.
That's pretty close. That's pretty astute. I'm proud of you.
Thank you. I mean, I'm really, I don't know, we watch TV and my wife and I watch TV and we watch shows that are really twisted and not like normal TV and break all the conventions of plot, like Breaking Bad. And like twice an episode in a new episode when it's airing, I'll recite the line of a character right before they say it. I'm just, I don't know. It's like ESP, man. Something.
Because everything's scripted. It follows the formula. Gray State does no such thing. There will be a pile of bodies. You won't know who's going to end up in that pile while you're watching it. A film has to follow convention. It has to follow that storytelling formula. Otherwise, the story doesn't work. You and I know that as filmmakers. But once you know the rules, you can break the rules. And Gray State breaks rules, and that it's not only immediately physical, it's interdimensional, it's very layered, it's spiritual at times without, you know, adhering to any sort of you know, Western philosophy or anything. But it's deep. It's taken me a long time to craft this story, and while it might not be a physically surface level happy ending, anyone who's paying attention will extract some real values from the ending. I hope, anyway, if I can pull it off.
Are you a Christian?
All right. We'll be back with more of the interview with David Crowley, the late director of Gray State.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Now that the elections are over and liberty has slipped even further away, it's time to try yet another political organization. Campaign for a Longer Leash is a nonpartisan group of pups and dogs dedicated to fighting for longer leashes for all. We're not talking about no leashes, that would be catarchy. We just want the limited leash that the Hounding Fathers promised us. As Bone Barklin once said, a longer leash if you can keep it, ma'am. For more info, go to facebook.com/campaignforalongerleash.
Freedom Fiends. Are you there, Lou? Are you safe? Have you been contacted by the government?
No, I have not been contacted by the government. Therefore, I am safe.
All right. We're going to continue with this two-year-old interview that I did with David Crowley, the director of Gray State movie, the movie in progress that never got finished, who was found dead with his dead wife and kid this past Saturday. And he'd been there for a couple weeks in his house, which is about a half mile from our network in Minneapolis in Minnesota. And I know a guy that was in this movie too. There was an extra in it. And I asked him if he wanted to come on tonight and talk about it. And he's like, he did like the most honest thing I've ever heard anyone who's, you know, an actor or been an actor. Like he was like, you know, most people who have been in front of a camera would be like, yeah, man, I'll come on. I'll do the whole show. I met him for 2 minutes. No, but he was like, no, I don't really know him. I don't have anything to say about him. I don't know enough. So that was honest. I like that. So we're going to go back to this interview. We stopped it. We were going to the break. I just asked him if he was a Christian, and here he is answering that, and we'll let it play.
I am, but I don't know where to draw the line between what I've been taught my whole life and what is probably more closer to the truth, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of spiritual exploration. I tend to end at the same answers, though.
Are you familiar with a writer named Boston Tea Party?
No, Tom's familiar, but you'd have to elaborate.
He's a gun writer, survivalist writer, libertarian, Christian guy in Wyoming. He's written a bunch of how-to books on survival and guns and dealing with the police. And he's also written a novel called Mulan Labe, which is a pretty stunning first novel. And it's basically the state of Wyoming secedes and hilarity ensues. No, Wyoming becomes a libertarian paradise, but it ain't pretty. And there is a pile of bodies, maybe, or, you know, the scent of one anyway. I would look at it for a possible second movie. I mean, it seems like it'd be right up your alley. And a lot of people said for a long time it should be made into a movie. And if you read it and you're interested, I'll give you an introduction to the guy.
Oh, sure. That reminds me of James Wesley Rawls' novel, Patriots. Have you read that?
No, but it would be on the same bookshelf with this book for sure.
Oh, absolutely. It would. Yeah.
Yep. So how are you funding this and how can people help?
Okay, that's a good question. So far, Gray State represents what my partner and I can do out of pocket. That's calling in the favors, of course, but once we get a budget harnessed to our project, you know, we don't need favors anymore. We can get the big stuff. So basically, Gray State is something we cheated out of nothing, you know? So if you give us money, that should just be more encouragement to see where we can go with it. So Gray State's essentially a marketing tool at this point. We're going to show people the trailer, investors, studios, anyone with money, and see if we can get a budget. And a big part of that effort has been crowdfunding. So if you go to Indiegogo.com/Gray State Movie, that's our crowdfunding effort. And you're not investing, you're just buying stuff. Like, I want to give $50 to this project. Well, you're not just giving $50, you're getting a t-shirt, you're getting a poster, you're getting some high-resolution desktop wallpapers, you're getting some signed 8x10. We've got a lot of great stuff we're giving out, and that's all on Indiegogo.com/Gray State Movie, and that's our first effort. We're seeking $50,000, and that's just to get us off the ground. That's not what the film's budget's going to be.
You know,
we have to hire legal and all that stuff.
You know, Indiegogo recently kind of screwed over someone who's kind of in the I wouldn't say patriot movement, but, you know, someone of a similar mindset who'd be on the same shelf as you and I. I did an interview with this guy who is coming up with a printable gun. It's basically the idea that using a 3D printer, you could freely distribute over the internet CAD files for a gun and print a gun, which would get around gun laws or prohibitions or, you know, anything like that. And Indiegogo, he raised about $2,000 on there, and Indiegogo figured out what he was doing and canceled his membership. They refunded the money back to everyone who donated it, but I'd be careful about putting all my eggs in that one basket for sure, because they have a history of that.
Oh, yeah, PayPal does that too. If you make a notation that the funding is for anything other than innocuous, then yeah, they're going to cancel your payment.
PayPal, I never leave more than $200 in PayPal without cashing it out. And PayPal also has a thing that they don't really have in their terms of service, which is if you use their button that says donate, they will close your account if they figure out that you are not a 501c3 nonprofit. The donate button is only open to the nonprofit. What we do with our podcast is we have subscriptions through PayPal and explain that the subscriptions, you know, you don't get anything else other than our good graces by subscribing, but it's a monthly, you know, you can pay $5 a month or $10 a month until you cancel. And we make it clear that it's not tax deductible too. Michael Dean, I'm talking to Lou Sanderfien. Are you there, sir? Are you safe?
Yo, by the government. I'm here.
Yeah, and for those who are joining us in Belle Fouche, and where else are we on? A bunch of places.
Sturgis.
And yeah, and Mount Rushmore for the second hour. I want to recap what we're doing. We're playing and commenting on an interview I did 2 years ago with David Crowley, the director of the Gray State movie, the unfinished movie that the trailer blew me away, and I wanted to talk to this guy about his art. And most of his interviews are about
is the government going to take away our rights and do we need to take up arms? That's most of the interviews he ended up doing. But this is mostly just an interview about art. And Lou, you looked at the trailer again. You'd seen it before, right? Long time ago.
Oh, I've seen it several times, and I watched it with an amazing detail this time. I just really looking at everything and taking it in. I jotted down some notes here. Before I go into the trailer, though, I want to talk about how many people are saying he's fetishizing violence. You know, it's the bayonet polishers getting ready to take on the government and overthrow them and all that sort of stuff. And that is not the case. The trailer is about 2.5 minutes long, and it shows people going about their business. Kids are playing in the park. People are eating dinner and watching TV. And strangely enough, it shows government goons looking at people through security cameras, kind of like a telescreen sort of thing. So it does show the surveillance state. But the TV news broadcast, it shows on the little thing that QE4 has been announced. And QE4, for those of you that don't know what quantitative easing is, it's when the Fed starts printing money and just throwing it on out there into the economy. And that's where the boom and bust of the business cycle comes from. But anyway, the one bit of aluminum foil hattery that's in there is it does show people getting RFID chips, you know, to be able to buy and sell. It shows a woman going to the grocery store and her arm has to be scanned so that she can purchase groceries.
I don't think they'll need to do that. I think it'll be more like your Obamacare health card. You know, you'll have to check your guns at the door permanently before you can see a doctor. They're already asking.
Right.
I went to the hospital the other day and like sign on the door says, you know, no firearms at the hospital. And then that's new. And then you go in and like, first question the doctor asks is, you know, are you depressed? Are you having any thoughts of hurting yourself or others? No, that wasn't the first question, but that was a question in the middle of an exam to get asthma medication refill. Like, what is, of course right. not, you know?
Right. And that's a standard mental health screening right there. But anywho, it shows on the news screen, this is another news report. It shows martial law has been declared. National Guard deploys troops to quell rioters, and on the crawl, and I'd never looked at this before, but the crawl, it says that terrorist cells are using cash to buy guns, and RFID chip manufacturers are working overtime to fill orders. Now, as I said, the RFID thing is a little bit of aluminum foil hattery, but when you look at that guy from MasterCard who was talking about how evil cash was and how they want to be in control of the money and things like that, you know, it's really not a stretch because when you control currency, you control the people. But anyway, so as it goes on, the store shelves are completely bare, kind of like they are in Venezuela right now, and people are protesting this. Because, you know, when you don't have food, you know, people protest, which is probably about as useful as sitting in their house waiting for the government to, you know, deliver food to them. But anyway, and then the FEMA riot cops come out. Now, they're using tear gas on the people. Have we seen this recently? It wasn't FEMA cops, but it was police in Ferguson. Because they're shooting tear gas at people that were protesting. They're shooting tear gas at peaceful protesters and leaving the looters alone.
Since we have a lot to cover here and like a half hour more of this interview to play, is this your point? I'm guessing that your point is that it's not fair to say that this guy's movie was fetishizing violence and it was totally out of left field and it can't happen here. Would you say that's accurate?
Well, that's true. But the big thing comes where the cops start moving on to executions. You see armored vehicles going down the street, mowing people down, and you see people actually being shot in the head at point blank range by government troops.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is stuff that has happened in history before. So, you know, after the execution start, that's when the people start fighting back. And we're not talking about a bunch of square-jawed Rambo, you know, Chris Kyle-looking guys. We're talking about people who look like you and me, people that look like they work in offices.
They look like but in a little better shape.
Not even that. It looks like the common person that you see walking around at the grocery store. And they are fighting to defend themselves to keep from being executed. So the people didn't attack the government. The government attacked the people.
Yeah. So I just think
it's defensive violence.
I just think it's really unfair that even a lot of liberty people or some liberty people are saying like, oh, you know, like their only comment on this is, oh, well, he fetishized violence. Like, that's not an answer. That's what the newspaper said to try to convince you that he actually killed his wife and family. We don't know. We don't know if it's a false flag. My thing with false flags is I don't instantly go to the false flag. I don't instantly go to the government is behind this, like a lot of people do. But the government has done things like this to people. It's fact. It's public record. You know, and I'm not talking about the ones that are maybes. I'm talking about the absolute facts, like, you know, the CIA walking up to a journalist, you know, in some Soviet Balkan state and sticking him with some ricin in the back. That's happened. They've done it to American citizens. They've tried to do it to American citizens. And I'm not talking about the ones that are maybes. There are actual factual ones that we know this has happened. You know, we know for a fact that, like, you know, America got into the Vietnam War over a false flag, completely made up stuff. Same thing with the war in Iraq. You know, the government does things like this all the time, but I don't go to that instantly. And I'm kind of like, well, maybe we'll never know. And it's certainly set up so we'll never know, because the bodies were there for 3 weeks and, you know, there was a hungry dog in the house. So the evidence is incredibly compromised, even if someone wanted to do a robust investigation, which they probably won't, because the guy was somebody that the government probably doesn't like. You know, it could have been someone, non-government actor, who hated him and just did a home invasion and caught him unawares. He seemed like an upbeat guy. You know, he was posting something on Facebook, or somebody posted in his name on Facebook a while back about drinking absinthe, and people said, oh, that proves it. I mean, absinthe is a kind of psychedelic liqueur that, you know, has been legal forever in Europe. And I think it recently, some watered down version of it got legalized here. But I've been in Prague in a bar full of people who were doing nothing but pounding absinthe. And it was a lively place, but nobody was getting violent. You know, I don't think that proves anything. I just really want people to give a benefit of a doubt of not just immediately buying the mainstream explanation of the police saying, oh, it looks like a murder-suicide, you know. So I'm going to play more of this interview with David, the late David Crowley, just to show that there was a time a couple years ago where he was happy and full of life and hopeful for the future and making art and doing a great job with it. So here we go.
So moving on from funding to distribution, if you cannot get any kind of mainstream distribution for this, is it something that you would give away, or would you keep it locked in a closet somewhere?
Well, you and I both know if a studio bought this project, that it would just get put on a shelf or be drastically changed from its original message.
Yeah.
So in the interest of maintaining creative control, I will not sell the project. However, if it goes nowhere and someone's offering me $200 million or something awesome like that, you know, who knows? I got to feed the monkey, you know. But as it stands right now, I want to get this film funded, and I will get it made for whatever budget I can get. If that means $500,000, great. If that means $25 million, like it needs, then that's great too.
Okay,
but this movie will get made, even if it's a long term haul.
When you get it made, I'm hoping you can get distribution for it without getting it chopped to pieces. If you can't, come talk to me, because I'll turn you on to my distributor, who put out 5 of my DVDs so far and didn't cost me anything, didn't give me an advance, and they sell them and they give monthly royalties, and I make part of my living at it. So that's an option too.
Oh, great. Yeah, I've gotten offers from people in Germany and stuff already. I've got a lot of these offers kind of in a holding pattern, as it were, right now. But once we can figure out our legal structure and actually have these conversations, I can have people broker these deals for me. Yeah, we're gonna get distribution. I'm not worried about that. Part of the Gray State effort has been establishing the audience before we even make the film.
Yeah.
And that's something I think that we can demonstrate. And I think an investor is more interested in money than a message.
Yep, and you've definitely done that. You've got a lot of views on YouTube of this thing. How many views right now?
We're at about 193,000 as of today, and once we do Alex Jones on Friday, who knows?
Ah, okay. Well, this isn't coming out for 2 weeks, so everyone should know I interviewed you before Alex Jones, even though it came out after.
Yeah, that's what Gary Franchi said, too. Like, I want you before Alex.
Yep. So let's talk a little about the technical aspect of it. What camera did you shoot it on? I thought it was a Red camera, which you said, I wish. If anyone knows what a RED camera is, but it looks as good as stuff I've seen shot on a RED. What did you use?
We used the 5D Mark II, which is sort of like the, it's not exactly prosumer, but it's not exactly cinema either. It's a decent compromise if you know its ins and outs. My partner Mitch knows everything about this camera, and he was able to get the, It's a very flat cinema style color profile, so it's almost gray when you're looking at it. But what you can do is you can pull a lot of latitude post out of it. So very specific color grading will make it look really, really nice, like a RED camera, for example.
Cool. And that's 1080p resolution, right? 30 frames a second.
Or just what you're seeing is actually a 720 output, but yeah, it does shoot 1080.
Does it shoot 24 frames a second, or is it 30?
Yeah, 24.
Yeah, because I thought she used the 24 setting because it looked very filmic to me. What did you you're doing the editing? Are you doing the color correction in the post and things like that too?
Yeah, I basically did all the posts except for Mitch and I have a workflow. He does whatever I can't at the moment, and often he'll stack things a certain way. Like, I can give you the walkthrough of a basic a special effects shot that we have planned. For example, let's go with the UN shot when, like, the British soldiers are downloading the boxes. So I storyboard that shot. I figure out the elements that we need. We purchase 3D models for Maya, and we don't know how to use Maya because we're still in school and we haven't learned yet, but we anticipate learning how to use Maya. Anyway, we storyboard the shot and we figure out the different elements that we need, and then we get studio space. So we're shooting from a 13 or 15 foot ladder in a studio, and we array the actors in a certain way, and then we duplicate them. We shoot them in chunks so we can duplicate them in post. We buy three boxes, Mitch spray paints UN on the side. We duplicate those in post.
All right, we'll be back on the Freedom Fiends with the David Crowley interview from 2000. Couple years ago.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most of our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Freedom Fiends. So we're playing this interview that I did 2 years ago with David Crowley, the director of Gray State Movie, who was, if you're just tuning in, he was found dead this past Saturday next to his wife and kid who were dead. They'd been there for 2 or 3 weeks in the house. And the police are saying it looks like a murder-suicide, and the mainstream media is saying that. And the really disgusting thing is that a lot of our friends who are liberty people are saying that. And it's weird because they're people who, like, instantly jumped to the defense of, you know, any activist and you know, who's arrested for Bitcoin, drug sales, or anything like that, as they should, as we should. But, you know, basically saying, like, don't believe the mainstream hype. And it seems like some people are jumping to believe the mainstream hype and saying, this guy fetishized guns. I don't know if he did it or not. I don't know if it was a false flag. I don't know if it was a home invasion. I don't know if it was, you know, angry neighbor. I don't know if it was the police. I don't know if it was him. I just don't like that people are judging him on the trailer of his movie. And, you know, it's like, do you judge Mel Gibson because he's in violent movies? You know, or anybody else, Tom Cruise, you know? So I'm just going to keep playing this. We'll have a little time at the end to discuss it. But I want people to see the human side of this guy and the artist side of this guy. Because this interview did not, it was on a podcast. It wasn't on radio. It didn't get a lot of hits, so it's worth rechecking out. So here we go.
We mark off where the trucks are going to be. And then, well, for example, the British guys. We didn't have a whole lot of British uniforms, so it's just basically Mitch and I are those British guys. I'm three of them, and then Mitch is the guy downloading the boxes. So we have to plan out and shoot all those different elements separately. And then we have some of the actors be like the National Guard officer was Bob Cummings. Mm-hmm. Some of our other actors we just dressed up and made them the guys standing in line. Duplicated them. We shot different elements that go in the background, like the guy walking the fence open. And then we have our animator, actually Mark Casper, who's a local animator, he helped us with that shot before we actually learned Maya. So they're driving over a little bump in the road before the trucks actually can come through the gate. And then they come on in. There's actually helicopters involved with that shot and rooftop snipers. And then all of that is put onto a matte painting. And that's an actual Walmart. That it's a defunct Walmart in my hometown, actually. I went down there. I got up on a ladder, duplicated the angle, and I shot that picture. And then I did the matte painting on it. And then, of course, we shot video of sky, so we could put the sky in, and the matte painting includes the skyline of Minneapolis in the background, and it's all color-graded. But then you have to start thinking about shadows and reflections. It happened to be raining that day when I took the picture, so I had to create a reflection mat based off of where the water was. And so all those layers, like the guys walking over the parking lot, have to be duplicated and inversed, and then different blend modes applied. And this is a very complicated shot for something you see for about 3 seconds. But the way we do that is I would plan out the shot. I'd pick the shots of the guys that timed out the best so they could interact with each other. Plan out the shot for about 8 seconds, and then I'd let Mitch clean up my mats. And that's just a process of extracting the background from the foreground and really making it precise. A lot of that is rotoscoping. Anyone listening to this knows what rotoscoping is. It's flinching right now because we saw how small those components were. It's just a monstrous process, and that's just one shot. One shot out of several, probably 30, let me think. I had over 70 special effects shots.
How many layers are in that shot?
Oh, there's no way to compute. It's got the master comp has something like 80 or 90, and all of those are sub comps. And I'm in After Effects speech right now. Sub comps each have like another 80 layers. It's really hard to say.
Wow,
a lot of color coding goes into that. But that's just one shot, and we have a hell of a lot more actually, and a lot of them didn't even make it in the trailer. So when trailer 2 comes out, you'll see a lot more. There's a couple different. I mean, that was a locked-off shot. We've done 3D moving camera shots that we had to go, like, to the University of Minnesota doing location scouting in February of 2011. I'm like, this spot would work. And so we take pictures in 360 degrees, stitch them together in post, animate a 3D camera in Z-Space in After Effects, and have our layers at different points on the map, and it's just like a big simulated 3D environment, and we just plug our people into that. And what happens in that shot is our lead actor, Danny Mason, is engaging soldiers, UN soldiers, down an alleyway. He's dodging, he's firing, and then a Humvee spins around the corner with the minigun in the turret that starts lighting up the road. He dodges out of the way. He looks across the way at some of his buddies who are opening up with shotguns before they get lit up by a helicopter that then zooms through the street, lighting up civilians before dipping through clouds and taking off. And that shot didn't make it in the trailer. That took probably 8 or 9 months to do.
You used a word, I want to clarify something. You used a word in passing. You said downloading boxes. Is that a term for taking boxes off a truck, or does it mean something else?
Oh, yeah, downloading boxes. That's military speak, I guess.
Okay.
I was like, just taking boxes off the truck.
I was thinking something with computing.
Freedom Fiends going to go to the market and come back and hear the rest of this interview with David Crowley, director of Gray State Movie from 2 years ago, back when things were good.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Freedom Fiend. And if you're just tuning in, and I don't usually say this at the top of every segment, but I'm going to say it what we're doing in case anyone's just tuning in, because otherwise this will seem confusing. We're playing an interview that I did 2 years ago with David Crowley, the director of Gray State Movie. David was found dead in his home with his wife and kid who were dead this past Saturday. There's a lot of conjecture about it. Did he actually kill his family and kill himself, or did the government do it, or did, you know, who knows who did it? I don't know, and nobody knows unless there was someone else in the house who did it, then they know. But, I'm playing this interview with him to show the human side of the guy, what a great artist he was, how committed he was to art. And, cause I want people to hear this before they just say, oh, I saw that trailer 2 years ago. It looked like it was fetishizing violence. And I want to read this post he put on Facebook November 17th, 2014, pretty recently. He said, hello, everyone. Fun new facts. Gray State will go out on YouTube for free as soon as it is complete. He said, GSTR, Gray State, I don't know, trailer, update, something. I heard he was nearly done with the movie, too, which is another thing that leads to false flag suggestions. But he said, none of us will be paid. There will be no money. The material, all of it, will either be our own info weapon to throw our weight behind for the overall destruction of the systems that enslave mankind, or we're the same as the part-time patriots who try to turn around and cash in on the chaos. Hope to have something online around Christmas. And, you know, he died right around Christmas, is what the official story is. So here we go. I'm going to play more of this interview. Here we go.
What computers are you using for this?
I have an iMac. Mitch used a, I think for a lot, we have access to a school that has a lot of better computers. Mitch knows the specs on them a lot better than I do, but he just upgraded to a PC since Apple decided to crap out on Final Cut X, and it looks like that whole program is dead in the water, so we're all moving to CS6 on PCs.
That's what I use. Yeah, it's funny you said upgrading to a PC. A lot of people would argue with that. But I really think that at this point, PC and Mac are so close from copying each other that Macs just have prettier cases and cost more.
Well, now they're moving to the iOS software, which is basically an iPad. And who wants that?
I know.
And they're ditching their whole Pro line. So all their like Final Cut and Color in Motion, those things are all dead in the water.
I know.
So CS6 is definitely moving in to fill that void.
Windows is doing the same thing, too. I mean, I feel like going out and buying 4 Windows 7 computers and caching them in PVC tubes or something.
That's a lot of technical talk that Mitch understands a lot better than I do. But
well, Windows 7, I think, is like Windows has reached its pinnacle and it's perfect, finally, or as good as Windows could be. And they're moving to Windows 8 now, which is intended for pads only. I mean, it'll run on a PC, but it's like a whole different interface, and it's made for content consumers rather than content creators. And
yeah,
when I say caching and PVC tubing, I'm joking about how people, you know, bury guns in gold. And
wait,
saying,
who doesn't bury their guns in gold?
Who buries their guns in gold? People who fear.
Who doesn't?
Oh, okay.
Who doesn't these days?
I was like, really? You're asking me that? You made this movie? Oh, I didn't hear the who doesn't. Yeah, you know, I was joking about doing that with computers running Windows 7. So do you have a day job? Are you in school or what do you do?
Well, I am in school still. I graduate at the end of the month. I get my bachelor's. Woohoo! Who gives a shit? I'm going to move into my production company full time, also running the Bolt Exchange, my military prop rental company. So Mitch is my partner in all these endeavors, and hopefully we can make enough money to actually survive. I don't know. If Gray State takes off and starts to pay the bills, that'll be sweet. Otherwise, I'd have to take a back burner while we make a living. I'm a videographer, photographer. I can do website design. I'm a composer. I'm not that good, but, you know, I'm learning.
With your prop rental company, do you also offer, lessons for whoever's going to be pretending to hold a gun in a film?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got what's called BEAT, the Bullet Exchange Actor Training Program, and we train a lot of the guys, actually. The bad guy, the only bad guy with a face that you see, he's one of our actors. We train him. We train Danny Mason. We've got another crew of guys that we routinely go to, a lot of our door kickers. We train pretty frequently with these guys and put different kinds of weapons in their hands. And we do everything from police to SWAT to grunt-level infantry to special forces-type training. And they definitely get the runaround.
Yeah, I like that in your trailer, nobody has their finger on the trigger until they're ready to shoot. And that's another complaint I have about Hollywood. Hollywood's gotten a little better about that, but, even still now somewhat and a lot 5, 10, 20, 30 years ago, you know, cops running around with their finger on the trigger looking for somebody. It's like, no, man, that doesn't happen, or it shouldn't.
I think Hollywood's doing a great job. A lot of those guys are more professional than actual soldiers, in my experience. Tom Cruise is awesome. Not that I like the guy, but, you know, he knows his for weapons.
Yep. So what do you think can be done to prevent Gray State from becoming a documentary rather than a drama?
Oh, man. This is getting into the political stuff that I try not to get into. But, okay, well, the whole thing that happened with the RNC, I'm sure you're familiar with it.
You went there. You were down there, huh? You were in Tampa, right?
Oh, yeah, we were there. That was part of our promotion effort. We were there. But what you saw was, it wasn't even the, I went there hoping to see some skull cracking, like the police state, to kind of vindicate my efforts, you know, like, hey, yeah, this is really happening. Well, the cops there were kind and professional, very, very friendly, and the protesters were a bunch of belligerent kids. And so that didn't pan out so well. But what the RNC itself did was reveal what a sham politics are.
Yeah.
So we saw how scripted it was and how the Ron Paul people were being shut out and how Romney was going to win no matter what. And now it's out in the open. I don't know if people are paying attention yet.
Well, I did an interview about 4 months ago on the same podcast with a guy from Wyoming who is a GOP delegate, national delegate, and a Ron Paul fan, but he didn't just join the GOP and become a delegate for Ron Paul like a lot of people did. Like, this guy's been in the party for like 15 years or something, and he told me horror stories. I mean, basically, they did things to keep the Ron Paul vote out locally that involved like Dick Cheney being in the room coordinating it, that, you know, were somewhere between violation of GOP bylaws and, you know, felonious fraud, somewhere in the middle there.
Well, I think the second that you realize you have no part in the democratic process, if you can still call it that, and you have no say in the way you're governed, it's a very scary thing. So as I was watching the results of the state votes for the nominee, all I could do was go on the Gray State Facebook page and type, if you want to see the opening scenes of Gray State, they're on C-SPAN right now.
Do you vote?
And just looking at the faces of these people cheering for Romney, like that's the Gray State right there. So you ask, like, how do we prevent that? Well, you have to wake up. Romney's funded by the same people as Obama. You're just playing into this Hegelian dialectic left-right paradigm, and it's all bull. And you have to, like, wake up to these things and learn about freedom, you know, learn about where we come from as a species, as a people, and apply this to your own lives on a communal, like a community basis, and come back to, like, hey, get to know your neighbors, you know? How does you barter for some things instead of just participating in the consumerist lifestyle? And it comes down to that, a personal change. And I think that's how you can prevent a real gray state, because once you do that, you know your values and you know when they're being attacked. I think we're an anti-culture. I think that we are totally devoid of any morals. And so it's very easy for a new world order, so to speak, to roll in over us. And if you want to prevent a gray state, you got to learn who you are. And no one really knows. No one knows that.
Well said, man. Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of it has to do with not only getting to know yourself, but educating others, which you're obviously committed to doing. And you mentioned stuff, you know, consumerism. I have a lot of stuff, but all the valuable stuff that I have is basically art supplies, you know, equipment for audio or video production, to the point where, you know, I'll spend I have 20 grand worth of stuff, and I buy new clothes about once a year, and I buy them at Walmart because I'd rather spend the money on a new ribbon mic or something.
Oh, I'm the same way. I mean, I'll invest in a pair of, like, Merrells, some good walking shoes, even when I can't really afford them, because I value good walking shoes more than some imaginary digits in a bank.
Well, good walking shoes can get you out of a place in a way when the bank is closed down.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So you got any, we're not running out of time here, but that kind of felt like a good ending spot, but I don't want to chase you out too quick. You got any closing comments of any length, short or long?
Yeah, I think so. When I was doing the Gray State project, when I was figuring out like the visuals that I mean, this is all 2 years old. This is when I got into it. I'm like, wait, RFID, you know, that's messed up. Martial law. Wow. How do I show that? And then for 2 years, I've been working on finishing those visuals, and the trailer came out August 7th of this year. The Gray State Project has evolved since then. It's gotten deeper. It's gotten very much darker. And so people, when they see this, their responses, you know, as I knew they would be, they're very divided. First of all, they're very supportive. Like, wow, this is like a future scenario that we can face, that we are facing right now unless we wake up. And then what they want to do is they want to assign their responsibility for activism to my project and assume that that's what I want to do, is wake people up with Gray State. When in fact, I can't make any such moral distinctions because I'm a filmmaker. I'm an artist. What I'm going to do is explore human truths, and I can do so through a pretty messed up context like the Gray State world. But how real or not real it is completely irrelevant. Like, what I'm saying is people kind of expect me to tell their story, their version of truth with Gray State, and that's not my intent. If it resonates as truth with you, that is great. If it doesn't, that's also great. But what I've been seeing is that the 3% or so who really hate Gray State, they don't hate it because it was shot poorly or that story could never work, and here's why. They hate it because it threatens them. It threatens their reality. And that just tells me that what I'm doing is close to the truth, at least, because they're that threatened by it. I think that the reality that most people live in is almost like a religion. Like, if you challenge a Christian or a Muslim who just grew up believing what they believe, they don't know how to defend it logically. What they're going to do is they're going to lash out in a very knee-jerk, negative response to defend their reality. And that's just the nature of humanity, I think. So what I'm seeing in the reactions to Gray State is either very positive or very negative. It's a very polarized argument.
I can definitely imagine some of the positive reactions. I mean, I've had them myself, and my friends have had them, and I've seen response videos even on YouTube with very positive reactions. Talk about some of the negative reactions, and in particular, have you been contacted by any government agencies or spoken to about this?
And we'll be back with his answer about being contacted by the government and people who hated him for making the Gray State movie after this trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Hey, this is some Squiskar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
All right. Yep. This is the Freedom Fiends with the triumphant conclusion of the interview with David Crowley, director of Gray State, who died recently, recorded 2 years ago. Here we go. I had just asked him if he's been contacted by the government for making this film, and here's his answer.
If I were contacted by a government agency, I would not know about it, so I can't really answer that question. I'm sure that I have been. A lot of the reactions I'm getting about the trailer, they want to peg me as some kind of Zionist Jew, I guess, because my name is David. I guess that's proof enough for them. My lead actor's name is Danny Mason. Oh, you mean like Freemasons? You know, so they want to develop their own conspiracy theories and
who's
stuff.
That?
They want to say that the whole film is COINTELPRO. I'm just trying to develop lists to put them on.
You've actually been accused of those things?
Oh, yeah, and much worse. And they want to say beyond a shadow of a doubt that I'm a closet Marxist and they can prove it. And all I have to do is say no because I'm on the freaking internet and they can't challenge me.
I was actually recently accused of being a COINTELPRO agent by a guy named Mark Stevens, who does a show called Adventures in Legal Land on the same network that I'm on. And I say you're nobody until somebody accuses you of being a COINTELPRO agent. I mean, Alex Jones gets accused of it all the time.
It's the litmus test of how close you are in your work to striking a nerve, I think.
Yeah.
So a lot of people say that Gray State is just fear porn and they're not going to support it and it's fear mongering and stuff like that. Just because Gray State is scary doesn't make it fear porn. Look, there are those people out there and that is within their right to do so, whatever gets them off, I guess. But that doesn't mean that I'm involved.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So what negative What other negative reactions have you had from people through the internet or in person? What do people say other than that you're Zionist, COINTELPRO, Marxist? What was the other thing? I don't even remember, man.
Oh, my. There's a bunch of them. I'm sure they think I'm a reptilian or something. there's been a lot of those very silly arguments. And I kind of stopped paying attention to the YouTube comments after a while. So I can't really answer, but I do know that I've already made a lot of enemies. And this was a long time ago, actually. I made enemies just by releasing little bits and talking to people about my idea for this film long before it was even released as a trailer. And I've made no enemies just because they don't want to hear it. And a lot of them have been family, not my family, but I'm talking about other actors who've spoken to their family about it. And people just don't want to hear it. And what they do is they assign, like, well, that can't be real, so it's going to be a terrible movie, so I don't want to hear anything about it. But I wonder if they thought the same thing about Toy Story. Like, hey, toys don't talk. This movie sucks.
Yeah.
So the negative reaction so far has largely been not reputable. So it's just been a lot of, you know, silly banter about, you know, I'm a Zionist pig and don't support my film.
Huh. Wow. Do you have, like, did you get city permits to do it or just shoot it guerrilla style?
we wanted to do it for real, but a lot of it was guerrilla, unfortunately. A lot of the scenes we did, it was like, they had the real scale of a real production. So a lot of them, yes, we went to the city, we got permits, we hired cops to babysit us for a few hours, and we did it for real. But a lot of the stuff was just guerrilla, just because we couldn't get a hold of the city liaison who does that stuff, or they didn't know what to do. And
yeah,
it was only a 3-second shot anyway. So there's a couple things like that, but for by and large, it was a real production.
So Minneapolis doesn't have a film commissioner?
Minneapolis is a bitch to deal with. They want to charge you like $150 an hour, even if you're just a freelance photographer. So like the initial park scene, we shot guerrilla style just real quick. But the St. Paul people, I mean, Twin Cities is Minneapolis and St. Paul. Those guys are a delight to deal with. They'll give you a cop. They'll make all the communications for you, and they'll set it up for you. And all you got to do is send them a check at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, I struggle going back and forth with doing that. I mean, one thing is when you go to sell the film, if it's a real distributor, they're going to want to see proof of that kind of stuff, because otherwise they'll get a bill for it. The other thing is people charging that kind of, like, making it too hard to do and wanting to, you know, charge the wedding photographer taking pictures in the park. That kind of kills commerce, too. It kills anyone wanting to film there. They'll go one state over or something.
Or they'll just do it, not tell anyone. Kind of exemplary of the system, which creates its own criminals, I think. They just make a bunch of laws that no one follows.
Absolutely. So how can people find your film, and how can they help with funding? What are the websites?
GrayStateMovie.com is our website, but if you Google GrayState, you'll get 40 pages of hits. It's really getting out there, and they all kind of funnel back to the same source. GrayStateMovie.com. YouTube.com/GrayStateMovie. Basically, if you Google GrayState Movie, you'll get all of them. We're on YouTube, we're on Facebook, we're on the web, we've got Indiegogo going on.
It's GrayState with an A, G-R-A-Y, the American spelling.
Yeah.
Right? Yep.
Yeah, people read that and they want to spell it with an E, but it is an A. If you want to get the right YouTube search result, spell it with an A.
Yep. Well, cool, man. David Crowley, it's been really great having you on here, and I think people should go out and see the trailer to GrayState and help you out with funding, and I wish you the best of luck, man.
The knowledge of the ancient.
Let's have you on again in like 6 or 8 months. I'd love to do that.
Rocking. Yeah, you know my email address.
Cool, man. Worms.